Thanks for listening to this episode of the Westerosi Primer. For full show notes and more about all things Westeros, head to thewesterosiprimer.com. Before I start playing the intro music, check out this friend of the show.
Are you tired of having to change to different podcasts for different topics?
You think you know what we're going to talk about.
And welcome back to Three Fates Decide.
Then we're the podcast for you. Three Fates Decide podcast ranges in a variety of topics, all the way from true crime to reviewing different movies, shows, theater, to the hottest pop culture gossip and topics.
It just sounds more dramatic that way.
All right, so this week we are going to be talking about...
You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and all other podcast players. New episodes post every Friday. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Three Fates Decide with the three spelled out. You can also shoot us an email at threefatesdecide@gmail.com to send us topics you want us to cover. We want to cover what you want. Want different topics? Well, then let the Three Fates Decide.
Three Fates Decide podcast.
Greetings, fellow acolytes. Welcome to another episode of the Westerosi Primer. My name is Liz. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I hope you enjoy this journey of all things Westeros. And in this episode, I'll be talking about my final thoughts on House Targaryen after spending episodes talking about all of these different rulers. After that, I'm going to do some final housekeeping announcements before I go on the hiatus and sign off. There's going to be a few things that I want to bring up to you guys about House Targaryen. And I'm sure if you have been listening to all of the episodes of this particular season, you may have noticed a few themes that came up. First thing to talk about is that House Targaryen had a very overambitious conquest. What do I mean by that? When we start off with episode 202, I discussed Aegon the Conqueror, who was, of course, the first king of the dynasty. And he had a very ambitious plan to basically conquer all of Westeros. And for the most part, he succeeded with 6 out of the 7 kingdoms, but he failed to take over Dorne. And then it took 2 centuries for Dorne to finally be included as part of the 7 kingdoms. And it was done through marriage. All the attempts of including Dorne through warfare failed multiple times. And to be honest, it seems really strange to me how dragons weren't enough to take over Dorne, just like they were able to take over the other kingdoms with the 3 dragons. It just doesn't seem like it makes that much sense to me. It feels a little too much like there was plot armor happening here. Now, when you want to compare to medieval history, which of course is a major source of storylines and characters used in the saga, and I have mentioned this in several episodes from the season, yes, there were some logistical reasons why attempts to conquer other regions and countries may work, and other times it didn't work, and sometimes it worked, but eventually it went backwards a few years or even a century or so later. There are a lot of historical reasons why that happens, and this is not a history podcast, so I'm not going to deep dive into that. But it just felt a little weird. And also, just to be more realistic, which is a thing that George likes to say that he tries to do with his saga, is that it does make sense that there's bound to be at least some parts of Westeros that was more difficult to take over versus other regions. But I personally felt like Dorne had a little too much plot armor in their favor. Another thing that definitely comes up in the aftermath of the dance, which we are, of course, seeing in House of the Dragon, is that House Targaryen has too much of a dependence on dragons. Now, understandably, if you have the ability to ride dragons and control dragons to some extent, yes, it makes sense that you would use them as a tool for expansion, conquest, and the ability to establish your position as the top of the societal pyramid. However, over time, you can't depend on this powerful weapon to be what puts you at the top the whole time. You need to start balancing it out, because the fact that you control dragons basically means that your ability to stay as the ruler of everybody is dependent on you having the ability to threaten people with a deadly weapon that only you have access to and nobody else does. And we do see this to some extent in real life when we talk about nuclear weapons. At this point in time in the 21st century, nuclear weapons are still among the most powerful weapons that we have in the world to establish dominance. And the fact that multiple countries have access to nuclear weapons does, in some extent, prevent other countries from thinking that they can start doing things whenever they feel like it because you have a nuclear deterrent. In the case of House Targaryen, the dragons are the equivalent of a nuclear weapon, and that is how they maintain their position of power for over a century until we have the dance where, spoiler alert, if you didn't listen to those episodes, the dragons eventually die out. And we see that subsequent to the loss of the dragons, the Targaryens had to use more traditional political conventions and tools to maintain their power. In reality, they should have done more of that a lot sooner than they did, but they didn't really do good enough at that. And you could make a case that, historically speaking, some kingdoms and some rulers had a similar issue, but not to the extent that the Targaryens did. Sticking with the aftermath of House of the Dragon, something that we see is the lack of planning regarding inheritance. We had a very serious problem that came up when Jaehaerys I had many children, but a large percentage of his children, through different circumstances, ended up dying before he died. And that created a succession crisis, because it got to the situation where the choice of ruler who would follow him was down to his grandchildren, because most of his children died, and the handful of children that were still alive, for different reasons, they were not eligible to sit on the Iron Throne after him. So it was down to who among his grandchildren and even great-grandchildren should actually rule after him. And the thing is that, like I discussed in the Jaehaerys episode, there is an argument that the Great Council of 101 created more problems than it actually solved, because it did create a precedent where the nobles had a little bit too much say in who's going to rule. And you could make a case that maybe they should have some say in the matter, because they have to follow and obey the person who's going to sit on the throne. But of course, in Westerosi society, it's very patriarchal. So unsurprisingly, Viserys, being the male contender, was going to win in the vote. Although I should mention, as a reminder, in case you didn't listen to that episode, is that House of the Dragon actually simplified what was really going on. They just made it purely as Rhaenys versus Viserys, when it was a little more complicated, because technically, even though Rhaenys was a candidate to follow her grandfather, the fact of the matter is that actually her claim was dismissed fairly early on. It was primarily her son Laenor who was ultimately considered one of the real contenders against Viserys. But of course, logically, Viserys is going to get selected, because when the council happened, Viserys was an adult and Laenor is a child. Plus, on top of that, Laenor is technically a Valyrian. He's not a Targaryen. So it does create an issue of, if for some reason Laenor was selected, it would create a situation where possibly he would have to give up his name as a Valyrian and take on the name Targaryen, because then you would technically be creating a different dynasty if he kept the name. But then we have the complication where Viserys decides that he would name his daughter Rhaenyra as the heir, but again, related to the whole lack of planning and foresight of the inheritance issue, he bizarrely remarries and has multiple children, including three sons, and he still insists that his daughter Rhaenyra should be the heir, which doesn't make much sense. Not to say that I don't support having a female ruler, of course I do. It's just that, knowing the way Westerosi society works, it just does not make any sense why he would continue pushing for Rhaenyra to be his heir when he has sons, and Westerosi custom says that his son Aegon should be the heir. It just creates a lot of problems that we saw with the Dance of the Dragons. And we do get some similar, though slightly less intense, inheritance conflicts when we get to the issue of who is going to follow Mykar. It just seems pretty obvious that Aegon was going to follow his father, because his two oldest brothers were already dead, and his one living older brother also took the vows of a maester. And even though being a maester is not as intense as, say, being a member of the King's Guard or being a member of the Night's Watch, you still are, in essence, giving up a lot of your privileges to become a maester and serving other lords or even the king. So technically, it was pretty clear that Aegon was going to be the ruler, but probably in connection to what I mentioned before about the issue of the Grey Council of 101, which was Jay Harris's inheritance crisis, there was a potential that nobles that didn't particularly like Aegon for his pro-small folk attitude could have easily pushed for Aemon to take the throne over his younger brother, and argue that, well, if he gives up his choice of being a maester, we could have him be on the throne. Though, when you think about it, even if Aemon was willing to entertain that idea, there is no guarantee that he would be significantly different from what Aegon wanted to do as king. Maybe Aemon may not have gone quite as far as Aegon does in terms of wanting to give the small folk more rights and do more things to help the common people, but I think that he wouldn't necessarily enforce too much of noble power over the needs of the common people. But that's just my speculation. I don't really know, of course, because that's not what actually happened. Another interesting thing that I'm not the only person who's ever noticed this. Other fans who deep dive into this universe have noticed this as well. But you think about how there was about 300 years when Aegon the Conqueror started his conquest. And then you get to where A Dance with Dragons, which is the last novel that George published. It is roughly the equivalent of season 5 of Game of Thrones, just for some context. It's about 300 years of time. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress in terms of society, culture, technology, education, and all sorts of aspects of life. There doesn't seem to be as much development, which is bizarre when you think about it, because you look at real world history, you think about how much progress happens in 300 years. As an example, let's think about the 1700s, okay, the year 1700, compared to the year 2000, that's 300 years. You think of how much change and progress in terms of our culture, technology, economics, world history, so many things from 1700 to the year 2000 happened in a span of 300 years. And yet you don't see as much progress happening in Westeros in 300 years. It's very bizarre. There is a case to be made that this is an issue with George's world building, which, let's be real, there is some issues that I personally have with some of the world building. But if House Targaryen was the ruling dynasty for a good percentage of that 300 years, it just seems very strange that during that whole time period that there hasn't been any significant improvements. There were some improvements, don't get me wrong, there were. Because as I mentioned in the Jay Harris, the first episodes, that Jay Harris and Alysanne as a power couple did pass a lot of laws to limit to a certain degree some of the power that nobles used to have. And it benefited the small folk a lot, which I think is what Aegon V also tried to do. He tried to expand on some of those things that his ancestors had done, but unfortunately, too many nobles felt like he was going a little far with what he wanted to do. Now, of course, no king has the genius knowledge of being able to know everything and decide on everything, but you would think that he and the small council would have done more to make Westeros progress than it actually did. Which is why it's very entertaining when you read fanfics and fanfic authors come up with some really interesting ideas of, well, what if there were some actual progress that happened and this would be the consequences? That is actually a really interesting idea, which I enjoy. And if you are interested in reading fanfic that explores those ideas, I have at least a couple of different stories that I enjoy a lot. So who knows, maybe I will share some of those stories with you listeners via the newsletter, which I'm going to talk about in the second half of this episode. Another thing that you may also have noticed if you've listened to the episodes as well is that in many cases, there was a real lack of balance in terms of work slash family balance that we as modern people sometimes deal with. The Targaryens had that in an extreme degree because there's a struggle for rulers to be effective rulers, but they don't necessarily turn out to be very good parents. Despite the fact that Jay Harris I is considered one of the best kings in the Targaryen dynasty, he heavily suffered from this lack of balance because He was a very effective ruler. He did do a lot of things to advance the society as much as he could during his long reign. But if you listen to the two episodes that I did about Jaehaerys I, you will notice that especially once he and his wife had their fourth, fifth, sixth, etc. kids, the relationship between him and his children start to disintegrate very significantly. His two oldest sons, Aemon and Balon, they clearly had a very good relationship with their father, and he definitely loved the two of them because they were not just his oldest children, but they had more sense of responsibility, duty, maturity, and they were very involved with assisting their father in ruling the kingdoms. But you clearly notice that when it comes to the younger children, his relationship with them is very different. At times, the children have almost antagonistic relationships with their father, especially with Saera Targaryen, and to some degree Visera as well, because these two girls clearly didn't have as much parental involvement. And when they did get some parental involvement in their lives, it has more to do with being the bad cop versus the good cop. Like, they only got any real attention from their parents, especially their father, when they quote unquote do bad stuff. And his interaction with them consists of the equivalent of yelling at them and grounding them and sending them to their room without their supper. And it just progresses to a real deterioration of any relationship between his daughters and him. And when you look at these relationships from the perspective of a family dynamic, it does become very sad to think about. Now, I may not always get along with every single member of my extended family, but we do have some mutual respect for each other, and we are always polite when we have family gatherings, etc. It still feels sad to me that you have some of these families where their relationships between parents and kids deteriorate so badly. But you also see other families where clearly the dynamics are pretty good. Like, you get the impression with Daeron II that he and his kids more or less got along reasonably well. They had fairly good relationships with each other. There were no war interactions with each other, that there was no antagonism between parents and children. It's a real toss-up who has the worst parent-to-children dynamic. Is it Aegon IV with Daeron II, or is it with Aerys II and his children? Although I guess actually Aerys probably has it worse, because Aegon IV was not insane, and he didn't constantly threaten to kill members of his own family, although he definitely did not like Daeron II. But as I mentioned in the Aegon IV episode, that dislike has more to do with the fact that Daeron had the nerve to check his father's negligence and abuse of power. But the final question left, I would say, in regards to House Targaryen: once Aerys II was assassinated and the dynasty was overthrown and Robert Baratheon became the king, one of the big questions that comes up in Game of Thrones and, of course, the novels that George wrote is whether Daenerys should come back to Westeros and retake the throne and basically restart a Targaryen dynasty. Now, there are many people who are pro Daenerys who argue that yes, she is the only Targaryen left, and she has dragons, she has an army, she has a birthright, and she should totally take the throne especially because Robert was a lousy king and Joffrey and Tommen are not even Robert's kids. So they definitely don't have the right to be sitting on the throne anyway. So you would think that, okay, maybe Daenerys should become queen and take the throne back from people who did not deserve to be sitting on it. However, I feel like for me personally, and this could be just a straight up entire episode, possibly two episodes of me discussing my complete opinion on this. But objectively speaking, when you look through the history of House Targaryen, which I did for the past 17, 18 episodes now, is that you compare Daenerys's journey with what some of her ancestors did. And you realize that as a potential ruler, the only ruler she can honestly be compared to is Aegon the Conqueror, because in order for her to get the Iron Throne, she's going to have to reconquer Westeros in the name of House Targaryen, which is what Aegon the First did. The problem with this comparison is that unlike Aegon, Daenerys never had any actual training in ruling, because before Aegon the First started landing in what would become King's Landing, Aegon had been raised and trained to become the Lord of Dragonstone after his father died, which is the tradition of House Targaryen for at least a couple of centuries before the conquest. So he had the education, he had the knowledge of what it takes to be a lord. Daenerys, on the other hand, if you really followed her journey, she had zero experience at ruling, and she couldn't really handle ruling Meereen. Already should tell you, as the audience, that if Daenerys cannot handle ruling Meereen, how can you expect her to be the hypothetical ruler of an entire continent of people who will most definitely not agree with many things she does? If anything, her story arc in Meereen should tell you everything you need to know about how she's going to be if she were to sit on the Iron Throne. And I would make a very good argument, and I'm sure if you look into this, what other fans say, many fans who do really digest all of this and really examine the progression of the story will tell you that no, Daenerys is not going to be a good queen. She is going to basically be wrecking everything and be just as bad, if not actually worse, than Robert. Because even though Robert Baratheon was not a good king, what saves him to a degree is he had a very effective Hand of the King who, let's be honest, did the actual work. And even though Littlefinger was a very shady guy who possibly was embezzling money from the treasury, for the most part, Robert's small council did a pretty decent, adequate job of running the kingdoms for him. Daenerys, on the other hand, she doesn't have anybody really capable of doing the job of running the kingdoms, because let's be honest, Daenerys herself would not have much patience of ruling. She wouldn't be the first member of House Targaryen who was like that. And aside from possibly Tyrion being her hand, Tyrion is a very smart guy and he is very capable, but he can only do so much. It's not going to help him do his job if the rest of her hypothetical small council consists of people who are just in the position just because they are her yes men, which is in essence what Aerys, her own father, wound up doing. In the beginning, Aerys did pick relatively competent people. Over time, he progressively ended up selecting anybody who was willing to lick his boots and kiss his butt to get positions of power that they probably don't deserve and they are not qualified for. And as I discussed last episode, Tywin was more or less the reason why Westeros didn't turn into a complete dumpster fire much sooner. There's just not a lot with Daenerys that would make me at least think that her ruling on the Iron Throne would necessarily be that much better than what Joffrey or Tommen through Cersei was doing, or Robert Baratheon. So why did I spend all this time talking about Daenerys? It does, to circle back, lead up to the question, should House Targaryen come back and take over the throne again? If we were to say it's Daenerys doing it, then I would say no, because she likes to talk about how she wants to break the wheel, but in reality, she's just another spoke of the wheel. She's not actually doing anything significantly different. She's just repeating the cycle of what her own ancestors were doing, like reconquering Westeros and her sitting on the Iron Throne, but she's not competent enough to actually be a ruler in the way that, like, say, Jaehaerys the First was, because she has no training to do the job. Now, some people may argue, okay, what about Jon Snow? Jon Snow is actually a Targaryen, a secret Targaryen. And you could argue that if he were the one to take the Iron Throne, he may not have the complete education that Rob, as an example, had, but he did get educated to some degree. He also had actual practical experience of being Lord Commander at the Wall, where he had to make a lot of decisions as a leader of men, and he had to learn how to compromise, negotiate, and resolve conflicts without always having to draw his sword, which is something that Daenerys most definitely does not have any real experience if you really paid attention to her storyline. So it is very possible, in my opinion, that if Jon was confirmed to be a legitimate Targaryen, which we only know this in the show, we don't actually know this for certain in the novels, because literally the last book that was published is basically season 5, which is when Jon was assassinated at the Wall. But if he was proven to also be a legitimate Targaryen, then he, number one, has a way stronger claim to the throne than Daenerys does, if you want to argue that. But also, he actually has experience and he does have enough intelligence to know that I am not some genius ruler who knows everything, so I should pick people that actually know stuff that I don't know and would therefore be qualified to do things for me. I would say that, you know what, unless you have a reasonably capable Targaryen representing House Targaryen who could take the throne, then no, House Targaryen should not come back to the throne. But that's my two cents. But yeah, so those are just some of my general thoughts about House Targaryen. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, before I close out for season 2, I have some bit of housekeeping related stuff that I want to share with you guys. There are some important podcast business I wanted to share with you listeners. I was also going to share a little bit about what I'm going to be doing during the hiatus that I'm about to go on with this podcast. So I have mentioned this a few times in some of the past episodes, but I heavily suggest that while I am on this hiatus, if you guys want to keep up with any updates and news about this podcast, especially when am I going to start releasing season 3, I really do recommend that you either sign up to the newsletter or follow one of the 3 social media accounts that I have set up for this podcast. In the episode notes, I will put links to the newsletter and to the three social media accounts. I have set up accounts on X, Instagram, and Blue Sky. Also, during the hiatus, I will be writing some essays, opinions, and some interesting articles via the newsletter. And incidentally, anything that I share in the newsletter will also get reposted on the blog on the podcast website. The real benefit of the newsletter is that you get to read some of this stuff directly in your inbox instead of you having to constantly check the website, which is not to say that I don't appreciate you guys. It's easy to forget to check these things out, especially because I am not going to write in the newsletter every single day. At most, I'll write once a week, but I unfortunately do have a tendency to not write that frequently. But you definitely will get something every once in a while. It's just not going to be like a spamming situation in your inbox, because I understand we all get way too many emails these days. But, you know, if you are really seriously interested in this podcast and you want to get some notice ahead of time of the next season and you want to read some interesting stuff related to all things Westeros, then yeah, the newsletter is the way to go. And as I've also been discussing multiple times in previous episodes, I have the poll I'm running. Once again, it is a poll where I ask you listeners, which Targaryen king do you think was the best king and which Targaryen king you think was the worst? So far, I have only gotten two responses from you listeners, which is a little surprising to me because based off of the analytics I've gotten, there's easily over 1,000 people listening to this podcast now. I would think that more of you guys would have an opinion about this. If you've listened through this whole season or you are about to catch up with what you may have listened to because you're a new listener, definitely participate in the poll because it's fun. You get to share your opinions. And as I've also mentioned in past episodes, I will also every once in a while update the poll results with you guys in future episodes. This will be an open-ended poll. I don't have a end date to it because it's basically a conversation starter type of poll. Now, again, I've mentioned this a few times throughout the season, but season 3 of the podcast will consist of me doing a discussion of the three novellas that George wrote about Dunk and Egg, who are, of course, Sir Duncan the Tall and Aegon the Fifth when he was a kid. And these three novellas are the basis of the upcoming Max series, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Last time we heard anything from Max about this series was that it will air later in 2025. However, as of this recording, they still have not made a definitive statement as to when the show is going to start airing, which is why, unfortunately, I cannot tell you guys when season 3 is going to come back, because not only am I going to do a discussion of the three novellas, but I'm also going to do a after the episode reaction to A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which logically means that I have to wait until that show's air date is announced before I can start releasing episodes. While I'm on hiatus, I am actually going to be keeping myself very occupied. Aside from occasionally posting stuff on the podcast newsletter and the social media accounts, I have other things that I'm also going to be working on. My most immediate activities will be, of course, podcast related. I actually have to do some updates to the show notes that I created for all the episodes of this podcast, because I keep saying that I will include links in the show notes, but I openly admit I have been very inconsistent about that. In my defense, with the exception of the music I play in these episodes and also the podcast cover art and other related images for this podcast, everything else related to this podcast, it's all done by me. I do all of my recording. Episodes like this one doesn't really have a script, but as you could probably tell, most of the episodes are scripted and I write those scripts. I also do all of the editing and I upload my episodes to the RSS feed every week. Even creating the podcast website and the social media accounts, those are all done by me. So there are bound to be a few relatively minor tasks that I either am inconsistent on or I just don't have time to do them. Now that I'm going on the hiatus, I'm going to spend the next few weeks making a concerted effort to keep up to date and finish off some of these tasks that I hadn't been doing before. Once I have some of those tasks completed, I have a few other things that I've had to put to the side because I was working on this podcast. I have plans to create a personal website. So before I started doing this podcast, I actually did a lot of writing, both in terms of fiction writing, and I used to be a pretty consistent blogger. And after a lot of consideration, I decided that I should create a personal website where I consolidate all of the different writing work that I've done in the past online and have it all located in one centralized place, which would be a personal website. Once this website is up and running, I will definitely share the links on the podcast website just in case anybody's actually curious about it. It's going to be primarily a writing-related website where I'm going to post a lot of my past writing and also some new content. I actually have a Medium.com account where I posted several articles and stories on there. Some of the stuff that I posted on Medium will also be reposted on this personal website. I will also be blogging about other interests of mine. Now, of course, everything related to Westeros will remain on the WesterosiPrimer.com and the related newsletter. But of course, I have other interests as well. Another thing I have been working on simultaneously with the Westerosi Primer is my other interest, which is Japanese and Korean comics. I run a Substack newsletter where I talk about stuff related to those topics. So if you happen to also be a fan of anime, manga, Korean manhwa, you read light novels, that is another newsletter you may be interested in reading as well. And of course, my original love is fiction writing. I have many ideas over the years of different short stories and even ideas for novels, but for various reasons, I never have time to work on them, or I just never completed writing any particular manuscript. Once I have stuff related to this podcast taken care of, I'm going to also work on that as well. But yeah, so I'm going to be pretty busy during the hiatus until I'm ready to start recording season 3. But yeah, if you're interested in following along my progress with any of those things, again, sign up to the newsletter, sign up to the social media accounts where I will periodically share updates on that stuff as well as stuff related to this podcast. But yeah, that just about covers everything for season 2 of the Westerosi Primer. If you're interested in finding out more for yourself, feel free to go to the full show notes where I will have links. But as always, if you do any research related to any of the content I talked about on this podcast, there will definitely be spoilers to the novels, House of the Dragon, and Max's future adaptations. Thank you for listening and tune in later in 2025 when I come back with season 3. Talk to you soon. What did you think of this episode? Check out the WesterosiPrimer.com and let me know what you think of this episode. If you have a friend or two that might like the show, make sure to share.